were put on this planet to work and serve people. And I'm a big believer in that. And so now it's more about getting fulfillment out of what we do. And we really enjoy hosting people, and we really enjoy, honestly, making a nice place for people to live with our long-term rentals. So, you know, it's kind of really cool to be able to provide people a nice place to go on vacation and then also provide people a place to call home.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further. Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I'm your host, Yona Weiss. Out here on this podcast today, we have another wonderful guest. We got Tim Grillo all the way out from the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, one of my favorite places in the world that I've never visited. So for many reasons, but Tim, it's great to have you on the show today. Please, you know, tell our listeners who you are, what you're all about.
Absolutely. And thanks for having me. This is awesome to be here with you today. So like you said, live in the Smoky Mountains, where my wife and I are investors here in other places, obviously real estate investors. Came from a little bit of the classic story of, you know, had a W-2 job most of my life until a couple years ago when we went full-time real estate. And we kind of have a couple facets of things there. Basically three, where we have long-term rentals, and long-term rentals are kind of sprinkled around mostly Kentucky and Texas. And then we have short-term rentals, which is another separate kind of entity on its own. And we've got four of them up here in the Smokies and a couple down in Gulf Shores. And then lastly, I'm also a real estate agent. So I'm an agent with the short-term shop that specializes in short-term rentals. So I'm licensed here in Tennessee. So that's kind of the third thing that we do. And then, we just kind of love real estate, and we do all kinds of stuff. We do, you know, my wife and I actually love rehabbing, and we can get into that a little bit. We do quite a bit of that. Actually doing one right now. We did a huge one last year. We did a big 6-bedroom place that we gutted down to nothing and started over. And so, yeah, that's just in a nutshell it.
Very cool.
The W-2 thing was kind of a, I don't know, progression and building a skill sets that led to where we are today. So
absolutely. Everything's a progression, and it really does. Yeah, I'm a firm believer in the fact that everything you do in life really leads you to where you are at this point and leads you to new opportunities.
Same.
And stepping stones along the way.
Absolutely. And I feel like the same is, you know, it's constantly happening. You know, it's like, I always wonder I can't believe this happened, and what's next, you know, and
what's next? Exactly.
What am I learning today that's going to like lead into the next thing? And that blows my mind sometimes. And it just, there's a lot of times I've pinched myself in my life, like, man, how did I land here? You know, and the changes from now to, you know, 15 years ago is just staggering. So
that's incredible. So if you don't mind me asking, what were you doing in the W-2 world up until the point where you got into real estate? And I believe, from what I remember, you actually got started in real estate at a relatively young age, but didn't go full time into it, obviously, until recently.
Yeah, I kind of got into real estate on accident when I was 17 years old, and I didn't even know I was in real estate. This is a long question, long answer, but anyway, I'll kind of walk through it.
Go for it. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. So
we like stories.
They're going to swap over each other or overlay a little bit, the real estate and their W-2 stuff. So I'll jump in W-2 stuff first. Right out of high school, I jumped into the trades and went through an apprenticeship program. And I'm very passionate about the trades and about skilled labor and stuff like that. And I think there's a huge shortage of that in the world. And I think it's a fantastic thing. You know, you learn skills and you get to just see and do lots of things that people. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I did that for really 16 years. I went through an apprenticeship, and then that built into, you know, I worked my way up. I stayed with the same company for 16 years, which is pretty rare in the trades. So I got to learn a lot of different things within the trade, but then also I ended up moving into the office at a pretty young age. And I kind of progressed up the ladder. And towards the end, when I left the company, I was running the company, running a big, I'll say the main division of the company. So I got to learn, you know, it was my first introduction to some business acumen stuff and learning how to run a business and learning how to some leadership skills and stuff. You know, I was running large, even before that, I was running big crews of, you know, I'll say construction workers. It's a little more complicated than that, but teams, you know, teams of skilled people. And that was a really cool part of my life. And I got to see and do the industries that we were in was pretty wide. We served a lot of industrial stuff. We served a lot of, you know, nuclear activity, you know, nuclear power plants, a lot of food processing companies, you know, so we did a wide array of, you know, manufacturing, you know, a lot of agricultural stuff. I grew up in Iowa. So we served John Deere and Caterpillar and some of those big companies. And so I got to see and do a lot of things. I was in and out of a lot of companies through that whole thing. And then that kind of overlapped into, you know, I was a fabricator. That was kind of my trade. I was a sheet metal worker, to be specific, but I did a lot of welding and fabricating of metal. And that really overlaid into my big hobby has always been cars. When I say cars, anything with wheels and engines and racing. So I've had, you know, cars and motorcycles and stuff my whole life, and race cars and built race cars and that kind of stuff. So that was always kind of a side hobby, building cars. And I've had like 250 cars and motorcycles, and I've built lots of cars, really high end stuff and cool stuff. You know, gotten to do see and do a lot of things with that too. You know, the whole racing career and traveling around the country doing that stuff is a whole nother story.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I always had a big garage and was building stuff out of my garage. I don't know. It wasn't really, I was kind of on accident. I kind of was seen, you know, one of the cars I built was pretty high end, and it ended up on the cover of kind of the biggest car magazine there is. And there's a story and everything. And that led me to my second career, which was a company that designed and manufactured high performance car parts. And it was the biggest aftermarket car company, or, you know, car performance company in the world. And they invited me down to help them start a new division of the company. And so that moved me from Iowa to Kentucky. And so I jumped into that. And that was like a big leap of faith, just kind of changing my whole world around. And that led to, you know, it kind of grew and grew and grew with a response. They kind of let me run wild, you know, and they let me ended up leading the team of engineers there, which at the time was like 30 or 40. And then we kept acquiring companies and building that team. And I led the product development. We kind of grew the company through product development. So we ended up growing that division from like 40 engineers to like 250 when I left. And anyway, so
that's amazing.
Another big shot in the arm of business acumen, kind of growing up with that and helping grow that company. And in the middle of all this, real estate was happening for me, myself, my wife, and I. So I'm going to jump backwards in time. Back when I was 17, I bought my first property, I bought two properties side by side. One was an old bar. It was a tavern that was closed down. And then the other one was an old railroad depot. And it was this little town of like 50 people in Iowa and nothing there. And so anyway, I bought these two properties from two different people for $2,000 a piece.
Wow.
And, you know, typical rebellious teenager, thought I wanted to, you know, take on the world, and I didn't need my parents for anything. And, you know, obviously I was wrong about that. But anyway, I tore down the railroad depot and converted the bar into, I'll say, my shed. It's, you know, the car hobby was in there. So I was working on cars in there, and I had a little cot, you know, where they used to, there was a little closet or room in the back where they used to store beer. And I had a cot in there where I used to sleep. And, you know, I thought it was cool because I had a men and women's bathroom and, you know, and everything. 18-year-old, you know, so that was my first thing. And long story short, you know, as I got into the trades, I was like 50 minutes from where I worked all the time. It was just a pain driving back and forth. So I decided to sell it, and I sold it. It's a long story how I did that, but I ended up like splitting. It was a half acre. I turned into 3/4 acre and 1/4 acre. And I did this all when I was like 18 and sold it for like $20,000, you know? So I made a bunch of money for a 20-year-old, you know, or 18-year-old, I guess, when I sold it. And so that was kind of my first, like, holy cow, this is cool. You know, I didn't really do a whole lot other than just some manual labor, and I made a bunch of money. And then I took that money and bought my first house. So I've never rented anything. I've never had an apartment or anything. I've always had a house. So bought a little house, and that lived in that for a little while, built a garage there. And then that turned into like, I was getting ready to sell it because I'd bought another house, and I had a buddy reach out to me like, hey man, can I rent that house from you? And I loved that because I hate, you know, again, car community. And I built a kind of a killer garage. And so my buddy moved in there. He said he's going to live there for like 6 months or a year. And he ended up living there for like 5 years and rented it from me the whole time. So that's, you know, I kind of became a landlord.
Accidental landlord, which, as you call it, right?
You know, and I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just like, oh yeah, sure, I rented it to you. And, you know, my house payment was like $250 a month. You know, it was a little house, and rented it for like whatever, $750-$800, normal rent stuff. So again, my eyes were opened up. And then you know, kind of life came along, had started having kids and stuff, and then moved to Kentucky and sold all the stuff in Iowa. And so I moved to Kentucky, my wife and I, that's when we kind of got serious and like actually decided to have a go at it for real. And we started buying long-term rentals in Kentucky, and we bought our first triplex there, scared to death. You know, we were like, oh my gosh, what if nobody rents it and all this stuff. That was like our biggest fear, is like, what if nobody rents it? And we turned out that was like the least of our worries. So anyway, I don't know what we got, like 10 or 11 places in Kentucky, and that was all going good. And this overlaps a little bit, but I was always like obsessed about short-term rentals.
From the consumer standpoint or from the landlord standpoint? You know, at what point?
I think it was really just from the me being dreamy and owning a vacation house. I grew up with very humble, you know, I never saw an ocean until I was like in my mid-20s and never been on an airplane until my mid. I grew up in very rural, I hate to say poor because I was very blessed as a kid, but you know, there wasn't any money. You know, so I grew up very, you know, it was 8 miles of gravel to a paved road where I grew up. And, you know, we're coming home from school and shooting squirrels and eating that for dinner, you know, is that kind of a thing growing up. So the thought of owning like a vacation property, I didn't know what it was called, was just, I don't know, it was pretty dreamy to me. And so anyway, like every time my wife and I would go on vacation, I'd like pencil out the numbers and I could never get it to work. Like how does this even work? You know, it's just like, it doesn't. And at the same time, I was on BiggerPockets and stuff and I kind of knew about the short-term shop. Not really though. It was just Luke was the crazy people over there on the corner. That one section over there that nobody looks at, you know, making jokes all the time. But I never really paid that close attention. And anyway, every time I went on vacation, I come close. Like we were almost bought property, like everywhere we went on vacation. And it drove my wife crazy because I was just like obsessed every time we went somewhere, I was looking at real estate. Anyway, long story short, we were in Gulf Shores one time and I came across this thing and it was for sale by owner as a condo. And I reached out to the lady and the lady was like in her 70s and widowed. And she was running herself. She was self-managing it. And I'm like, holy cow, if this lady can do this, surely we can do it. You know, that, and that made numbers work. You know, it's like, boom. And it's like, I opened my eyes up a little bit. So like when we did the deals, like I made it, like I had to get all of her information. It was like, everything was on paper. It was like completely the wrong way, not the wrong way, the hard way to do it. And she had folders and folders and every guest was a folder and all this stuff. And I was like, holy cow. And so anyway, on the way home, we never really even saw the place, but like we went down there and met with her and stuff and it was, you know, it was rented. So we couldn't get into it. So like on the way home from closing on it, I think, or something, I don't remember, but we were driving and Googling, like, how do you manage a short-term rental? And came across Avery's famous podcast and with BiggerPockets. And we listened to that on the way home and immediately like called her the next day. And that was back when it was a little smaller organization. And you know, talk to her. Anyway, I got hooked up with them as a client. And, you know, you mentioned Julie's been on the show. Julie was actually our agent and good friend of ours. But anyway, ended up like within really quickly, like, I can't remember if we had closed. I think we just closed on that condo and we bought a cabin in the Smokies or got under contract on a cabin in the Smokies. And that just started it all, you know, and in the middle of this, we're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. So we bought the first one. And then that actually, then we dealt with our first hurricane right in the middle of that. And actually the first place in the Smokies, like saved us from all the expenses of the hurricane. Cause it paid for everything. You know, like it was like, we made enough income off of the place in the Smokies to kind of cover what we went through with the hurricane down in the Gulf. Cause our place was shut down for a while and it was pretty tore up where our building was on the national news. And so that was cool.
And meanwhile, you're still working full time.
Oh yeah. Full time gig through all that. And a pretty demanding one, I'll say. And actually, somewhere in there, you know, that company went from being a private company to a public company. So I was heavily involved. I was on the executive team of that, you know, happening. So there was a lot going on. And then also in there, so we kind of got addicted to short-term rentals. And we're like, man, how can we, like, change our life to, like, kind of go all in on this? So we actually made a decision. We had a big property and house and everything in Kentucky. And as you might be able to tell, I'm sitting in an Airstream or in a trailer, RV.
It looks like that. I was going to mention, you see the curved roof there, it kind of gave it away.
I'm not in a private jet. Yeah, some people think I'm in a jet, and I'm not in a private jet. I'm actually in an Airstream. So several years ago, my wife and I made the decision. My wife's pretty hardcore minimalist, and I am not. And I'm more like a borderline hoarder. So she actually, I don't know if you want to call it, taught me, helped me along the way, but we kind of adopted that lifestyle. We decided to sell everything and go super simple and, you know, not just, it raised a lot of capital, but that was only part of it. We really wanted to lower our expenses. So we did just that. We sold everything. We sold our house, our 20 acres, like all our stuff. And we moved into an RV and it's been fantastic. You know, so we took the money from, you know, the money from selling the house and stuff. And we bought four more houses. You know, we bought two vacation rentals and two long-term rentals with that, you know, with that capital. And that was just kind of enough. Shot in the arm of whatever to get us going a little further. And then at the same time, our expenses dropped dramatically. And in the middle of all that, you know, I, again, kind of on accident, became friends with Luke, Avery's husband, and him and I got to be pretty close friends. We're both from the Midwest and we both had very similar upbringings. Both our dads were Vietnam vets and he's from Nebraska. So anyway, him and I got really close and started talking daily and stuff. And he just kind of bugged me for like a year. And he's like, why don't you quit your job and come play with us? You know? And finally I did. So we kind of got to a place where like, okay, we got however many we had at that time. And we're like, let's just give it a go. You know, it's always a little bit of a dream of mine to be self-employed and have our own thing and all that. So we both quit our jobs. My wife quit her job about 6 months ahead of me, and she kind of took over the management of all of our properties. And we still manage everything, actually, the long terms and the short terms. So that's kind of her role. And she's guest services, and I'm on the acquisition and building side of things.
Right.
And so.
Wow. That's incredible.
So yeah, we moved to Tennessee. We were actually living in the RV before that. We lived in the RV in Kentucky for a while. I think over 3 years now that we've been in the RV. So it's been awesome. And it's coming to an end. We're actually building a place here. It's a little bit of a house hack type situation here that we're doing. One of our cabins that we rent came with a huge two-story garage.
Mm.
It's separate from the house. And then the whole upstairs is just sitting there empty. It wasn't finished. So it had a staircase and that was it. So we're actually rehabbing that this year, and we're going to move into that. So that's going to be a little bit of a shift for us. So we're giving up the...
That's cool.
But they're going to be tiny, or not tiny. It's like 800 square feet, which is a lot more than 250, which is what this thing is.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. What a story. I have to ask you, though, becoming good friends with Luke, has that had any influence on your hairstyle decisions?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You know, I'll be honest. You say that. You know, kind of the way... Where I was in the corporate world, I'm long hair and wearing overalls. I don't want to say I wasn't allowed, but I kind of wasn't allowed. You couldn't have long hair and tattoos and all the crazy stuff, but I always wanted to, you know? So when I retired from the corporate life was my last haircut. I don't know. Didn't really have so much to do with Luke, but he does happen to have long hair as well.
Yeah. That's amazing. So you mentioned a lot of stuff to unpack over there. I mean, there's so many questions I have from that story, but I mean, just the early beginnings from kind of doing it on your own and then buying the properties along the way and the short-term rentals. I mean, right now you're obviously in a place where you're still working in terms of the being a broker, being an agent with the short-term shop and running, you know, several properties. I mean, full-time, that can be a full-time gig in of itself. Just the long-term rentals, the short-term rentals. I would assume that they have less daily kind of, you know, involvement because a lot of it can be automated. I mean, you're not doing the same thing that old lady in Florida in the Gulf.
Yeah, no, not even close. You know, and again, that's, you know, not to short-term shops horn too much, but that's kind of what they teach, you know, and that's, but yes, it's all about building your systems. And early on, before we knew about the short-term shop, and really when we started our own, we had a running PowerPoint that we kept for our long-term rentals, and it was called Turning Problems into Processes. And it's really, you know, all about getting upstream about stuff. And when you have a problem, turn it into a process so it eliminate the problem before it becomes a problem again. You know, so we put a lot of systems in place with our long terms, you know, early on, and we just kind of followed that mentality going into this. So yes, you know, and it's, I'm not going to say it's not demanding. Short-term rentals are more work than a long-term rental, but it's fun. And we've actually, my wife and I have held ourselves back from, like, we're really watching how we scale this thing, because as we go through life, you know, I thought I wanted to retire, you know, hit 50 years old, retire and hit the beach and with a cocktail in my hand and do nothing. I'm a little ways from 50 yet, but I kind of quickly realized as we saw glimpses of like the reality of that being obtainable, that I enjoy working and my wife enjoys working. And I think we're put on this planet to work and serve people. And I'm a big believer in that. And so now it's more about getting fulfillment out of what we do. And we really enjoy hosting people, and we really enjoy, honestly, making a nice place for people to live with our long-term rentals. So, you know, it's kind of really cool to be able to provide people a nice place to go on vacation and then also provide people a place to call home. One of our favorite things is getting pictures from our tenants of bringing home babies. You know, I mean, we've had so many babies that have come home to one of our places that means a lot to us. And even here, you know, with the short terms, we get, you know, graduation parties and birthday parties, all that stuff happens. And it's cool to be give something, people in their lives, something cool. So
it really is. I think you touched on something there that I think is really important, that the short-term rentals specifically are really a hospitality and, you know, a service company is what you're doing. You're providing a place for people to stay. Right. And you really have to have that bug in you to want to serve people.
Yep. And that's my wife. You know, that's where my wife and I are team. And she is, I don't want to say I'm not allowed to talk to guests, but I'm not. She is, I don't want to say a people pleaser, but she is, like, that's one of the things that drives her, is making people feel good and things like that, you know? So maybe it is people pleaser, but anyway, she's really good at it. And, you know, we had, I hate to call them arguments, but we had disagreements on like how far to go with that in the beginning. And because I was like kind of minimal on it, and she was like wanting to go all in on it. And I finally, it kind of hit me. I don't know what it hit me with it, but one day it just kind of hit me and I'm like, you know what? That's what she enjoys in life. So let her go do it, you know? And she does it, and the guests rave about, you know, her, and you know, our reviews are, you know, are great because of it. You know,
that's amazing.
Fantastic job at that.
It's harder to scale something like that, obviously, because you only have so much time.
Yeah. But that's kind of where, that kind of was where we're not going to scale the short terms very big. I mean, we're going to keep it probably 8. We're at 6 right now. We might go to 10, but we really kind of want to keep that as just something that we enjoy doing. And it makes plenty of money. I mean, we can live off it now. So it's like,
right,
you know, how big do we need it to be? And, you know, I think that's a question a lot of people, you just got to ask yourself, what do you want? What do you want out of life? For us, the short-term rental thing is a lifestyle that we enjoy. So yeah, I mean, it's absolutely scalable. You can, you know, add staff and add this and add that. But for now, where we are today in our life, we enjoy it. And we're going to keep it at a size where we can enjoy it. So that's kind of,
yeah,
we're going to grow the long terms a lot more than the short terms.
Interesting.
And just keep the short terms as our fun little thing, you know, so.
Okay. Are the long terms, you mentioned they're in Texas and Kentucky, but yes, you're being stationed in Tennessee currently, like, where are you growing or those long-term rentals? I mean, it's still in those markets.
Yeah, we're deciding that right now, to be honest, because we're getting ready to buy some. And honestly, it doesn't matter to us. We kind of learned how to manage from a distance by doing short terms. And then we kind of reversed it when we moved here because we lived right by the long terms. And now that we live here, my wife can manage the long terms like nothing. It's actually easier to manage the long terms from a distance than the short terms because you're not worrying about rugs and a torn couch.
Right. There's no real daily correspondence.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's, you know, the hard part is when you got to turn, you know. But even that, we've got a lot of systems in place for doing turns and, you know, stuff like that, signing leases and all that kind of stuff that has to happen. So yeah, it doesn't really matter where we buy, but we are looking at Texas and we are looking at Kentucky. Kentucky's been really good to us. The places there have done fantastic. So I don't know. We're having those discussions right now. Where do we want to buy next? And we don't want to add too many markets. So we're being careful about that.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned you had a couple smaller multifamily properties like triplex and whatnot. Have you looked into like larger or kind of mid-sized multifamily as well?
Yeah. We're kind of right there right now. We're looking at what do we want to do next? Do we want to, you know, we're actually looking at possibly jumping into a little bit of syndication stuff just to diversify a little bit really. But then also, what do we want to buy ourselves next? You know, we have single family and then we have some duplexes and triplexes and stuff like that, but we are looking at some small multifamily opportunities as well. So
I mean, the Midwest, especially Kentucky, there are some great, you know, it's a great market for those type of properties. Yeah, you know, from like
we've kind of
5 to like 30 unit properties.
And we've actually kind of really had a lot of success in what I'll call kind of rural areas. You know, we kind of targeted some towns that have like industry, but they're like under 50,000 people, way under. Some of them are way under. Like we've got a lot of properties in one town that has like 5,000 people in it. And it does, you know, the people just tend to, there's families there. They want to live there. They don't want to move to the big town and they take a lot of pride in where they live. So we've had a lot of success with that.
Interesting.
You know, great tenants and great, you know, and we take care of our places. You know, we try and have places in town, you know, we want to, and we don't go overboard. You know, it's, you know, I think I'm a big believer and you always got to understand who's your customer. You know, you don't need to go to Taj Mahal for somebody that didn't grow up in one, quite frankly, and they're very happy with our places and we put nice floors and nice kind of kitchens and stuff like that in them, but it's not over the top. So.
Yeah. And I think it's really important also, having been there and having lived in places like that yourself,
absolutely,
is much easier to know the markets. I mean, it's very difficult for people who are out-of-state buyers to know those type of markets, those smaller out-of-town markets. But that's where you have a little bit of an advantage, even though now currently you're out of state. But since you live there and since you know the markets, you have a great deal.
Yeah. And I really, in Kentucky, I know the community pretty deep. I was pretty heavily involved in the Chamber of Commerce when I had the position that I had. There was a lot going on with what we were doing. Like the way we grew that company, we were heavily involved in a lot of community things. And so I know a lot of the other businesses and I know a lot of the leaders of the other businesses and stuff still. And that definitely helps. So
that's good to hear. I'm very curious. You mentioned earlier on in the show about building cars and over 250 cars or vehicles that you worked on. I mean, I can't imagine you're still doing that in your Airstream, or do you have a place for that? You're still able to work on that?
Kind of. I gave it up. And it's like one of those things when it's in your blood, it's in your blood. So I mentioned the garage that we have down the road. Yeah, I've actually still got a couple. I kind of got rid of everything and now there's some stuff starting to creep back in. I'm being careful about them. I've kind of learned like, be careful what you let into your life. So anyway, I've got some stuff. I've got a 69 Bronco, which is really cool. And then several motorcycles. I've got 3 right now and a fourth one on the way. So yeah, everything from Harleys and BMWs, a little bit of everything, you know, so still have that, but I'm trying to limit it to not let it get out of control. The race car part was the super expensive thing. And actually I sold my race car to fund the first short-term rental that paid the down payment on the very first one. And actually that's, I don't know, this is kind of going another tangent. You know, a lot of times people getting into real estate is like, oh my gosh, the risk. And then what if this happens? What if that happens? And for me, I used to race, you know, so it's like you have a car with, you know, $100,000 to $150,000 in it, and you make a small mistake and it hits the wall and you're out $150,000, you know? And so like, to me, like buying a house and putting people in it to rent it was pretty low risk.
Yeah.
I just kind of keep that mentality. Like, you know, even a motor, you know, a good engine was, you know, $50,000-$60,000. We used to blow them up, you know, just by trying to beat the guy next to you for no reason other than life, other than just to do it. So that kind of made...
That's a good perspective.
Yeah. And I think that's true, honestly, with a lot of people. It doesn't matter what you do. Like, look at your hobbies, you know, and you don't say, what if I lose money when you go to play golf? You know, you don't say, what if I lose money when you go buy a boat? You know, I mean, people do things in their life that they enjoy all the time and spend money on it and don't worry about it. And I think that's fine. And for us, yeah, we've just kind of turned this real estate investing into something we enjoy. And
yeah, that's amazing. It's such a great perspective. I love that. And that's a great way to kind of transition into the final four, because I'm going to take a piece of that and just kind of let it soak in, because it really does depend all on your perspective in life. And that's an incredible perspective to have. So Tim, we're just going to transition now. The first question we ask is, what's the worst job you ever had?
Oh man. So growing up rural, I did a lot of weird stuff. You know, I baled hay and worked with pigs and did all kinds, but I'm going to say the worst job I ever had. First, that's tough because I love to work and they're all experiences that build. But anyway, I worked at a truck wash, a semi wash, like a car wash for semis, and washing semis out. And the worst thing on that was when you'd get semis in that hauled like frozen chickens, like the semis have a refrigeration unit and they tend to shut them off after they make their delivery. And then they come to a place like this to do what's called a washout. And you're literally going in there with a pressure washer and pressure washing the entire side of a semi after it's been like going down the road in the hot sun for Lord knows how many days after it's been shut off. So, I mean, it smelled horrible, yeah. As bad as you can imagine.
Yeah.
That always paid the biggest tips. So I always actually volunteered to do it. But you'd go in there and I'd be in there puking as I was cleaning.
Oh, man.
But it was horrible. That was like 16, 17 year old work.
That's so crazy. That's
that was probably the worst. That's pretty gross.
That is gross. So. Yeah. I'll admit
that. My term that I use in life, it smells like money. I used to say that a lot. I got into something gross. It smells like money.
Oh, man. Okay. Second question. What's a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
So I'm a Christian and 100%, I think a lot of books revolve and go right back to the Bible. But really, I'm going to say The Go-Giver is fantastic. And that book really changed my outlook on things. And it brought me to peace. A lot of times I struggled in careers, like what's my purpose and all this. And I really learned that my favorite thing about all my careers was helping other people grow around me, mm-hmm. and helping other, you know, whether they were staff or peers or whatever. And really, that's honestly a big part of why I became an agent, was just kind of a giving back. Like I've learned so much in this industry and life in general. And being an agent, I'm not out trying to like be the top anything. I just enjoy helping people, you know? Yeah. So The Go-Giver for me has been a staple in my life. I recommend it to everybody. You know, you got to read that book, and I believe in that. But, you know, the more you give, the more you receive. And learning how to receive is just as important as learning how to give.
Yeah.
So that's the biggie for me.
Awesome. Love that book. It's been mentioned a few times, and I've given that book as a gift to many people. So it's a awesome book.
It really did change my life. And it's an easy read. And
yeah, it's a great story.
Yeah, it's a great story. So.
If you guys listening to this have not yet picked up The Go-Giver, check it out in the link in the show notes, what we'll put there for you. So Tim, third question, what's a skill or talent that you would like to learn? I mean, it sounds like you're a jack of many, 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 many trades, but yeah. If there's something new that you think you'd like to do.
Yeah, there's a few things. I'd say like music, you know, playing an instrument. I've never been good at music. And that's like one of the things that I've picked up guitars and stuff a few times, and playing piano or something music. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. I'm horrible at it. I think I might be tone deaf. My wife says I have no rhythm. So anyway, I'll leave that alone. But anyway, yeah, something with music I think would be a skill that I would love to have.
That's great. So. Okay. So fourth and final question, and you did touch on this a little earlier, but I'd love to hear your kind of recap for us. What does success mean to you?
For me, it's balance and purpose, you know, finding the right balance in your life and finding like, what's your purpose? You know, I've heard so much like financial freedom and right. I don't know, I'm not gonna say I don't believe in it, but I've had enough tragedy happen throughout life to understand how quickly things can change in your life. Mm-hmm. And there becomes points where money doesn't really matter really quickly. So I think just balance and finding the right purpose is a big success, and learning that about yourself. And I think that's a lifelong journey, really. That's not something you just like figured out and you just like, oh, this is my purpose. And you just go, I think it's ever evolving. So I think success is having the consciousness about that and just constantly going after it.
Love that. Really love that definition. And I really agree with that also in many levels. So thank you so much, Tim, for joining us. Where can our listeners find you or reach out to you if they want to?
I'd say probably Facebook is probably the best place. If you're, you know, interested in, you know, buying or anything, the short-term shop, you know, shorttermshop.com. My email there is tim@theshorttermshop if you want to reach out, but otherwise just Facebook or Instagram. So.
All right. Very cool. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes for our listeners also. And thank you so much for joining. It's really been awesome. Great to get to know you a little better. And real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.